XCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
The following program is produced in a timeshare agreement with Civic Media. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect those of Civic Media. Enjoy.
Episode number 63 is pretty special, Paul.
Yes, it is. I'm excited.
This is part one of our two-part East Bay special.
Wow. East Bay. The legendary shoe company.
We've got the two founders of East Bay that started it.
Art and Rick.
Art Edis and Rick Gehring.
Right.
And then they brought in Harry Colcord as a partner.
And a CEO to run it for 9 or 10 years.
And Harry is going to join us today on part one of the East Bay special.
Exciting.
Let's go.
New York, Paris, Los Angeles, Chicago, Tokyo, and Wausau. This is the Wausau Business Show with your hosts, Ryan and Paul.
Just blocks away from the famous Marjan Hotel. This is the Wausau Business Show.
Right. We're here.
Episode number 63, the Harry Colcord episode.
Yeah, part one of the two-part East Bay special.
East Bay. How many brands were exported, businesses or brands were exported from Wausau, Wisconsin that became household names?
Well, let's see. Certainly Wausau Insurance.
Wausau Insurance. You've got maybe Aircraft, the band.
Oh, sure, yeah.
They were on the radio stations across the United States and on Billboard charts.
Yep.
But East Bay, there's no other brand. I mean, it impacted the culture of the United States and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely.
What were your favorite sneakers growing up as a kid, Paul?
Well, it was hard to beat the Jordans. And they were coming out with a new model every year, a new design. I mean, that was, I got to go with Jordans.
I'm going to go with Bo Jackson, my Bo Jackson shoes.
Oh, I like that.
The Air Force Ones didn't come out yet.
No, but those have had quite a history and they've been big for a long time. What an industry, the shoe industry, by the way.
And these guys blew it up, took it public. I'm opening up something that I bought on eBay, not to be confused with East Bay, but I bought an East Bay catalog off of eBay.
It came wrapped like a 30-year-old baseball card.
Yeah, it's in mint condition. This is from January of 1997.
Are your fingerprints going to knock the value down on that? I don't know. It was in a protective covering at one point when you opened it. I mean, I remember getting these in the mail. Look at it. Yeah. You got the actual, it's been years since I've seen one.
Remember when we were walking around Brooklyn and we asked people if they knew where Wausau was?
Yeah.
And nobody knew where Wausau, Wisconsin was or
not
what
many.
We said, what state is Wausau in?
I think we got Oregon a couple times.
Yeah, one person said, well, yeah, I know Wausau because of Wausau Insurance.
Right.
But, you know, 9 out of 10 people had never heard of Wausau.
Yep.
But if we would do that again and walk around in Brooklyn, New York and ask, have you ever heard of East Bay?
Oh, yeah, that would have been a totally different response.
9 out of 10 people would have said, of course I've heard of the East Bay catalog.
Yeah, I know. Especially of a certain age. I mean, there was decades where everyone was getting this in the mail on a monthly basis.
These guys were on a first name basis with people like Bo Jackson, Shaquille O'Neal.
Certainly Phil Knight from Nike.
Phil Knight, the founder of Nike.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him about Phil when he comes in.
Look at this.
It's paging through. I love it.
Hell of a catalog.
Look at the colors on it.
Oh, whoever owned this had circled things that they wanted, obviously.
Oh, so they used it.
Yeah.
Cool.
This is
how much did you pay for that?
On page 31, this whoever had this catalog before me had a Nike striped ringer tee. Looks like for soccer. But they had circled what they wanted to buy for $19.99.
Wonder if they ever got it.
A lot of circles going on here. Wow. They wanted a lot of football jerseys.
1-800-826-2205.
Call the hotline now to purchase your t-shirts and shoes. And it's like a throwback, brings back memories of a different era.
Remember when we were in high school and the people that would work on the phones at East Bay, they would work in the call center at East Bay?
Yeah, dozens of them, honestly. Everyone worked there.
And they would come into school and they'd be like, oh, guess who called in last night?
Yeah.
David Letterman.
Right.
It's like, oh, wow, you took a shoe order from David Letterman. Okay.
Yeah, you think he'd have his assistant do that.
Yeah,
but
I know. And then the rumors in the halls of Wausau West and the commons, remember people would come in and go, yeah, I heard Joe works at East Bay's warehouse and he stole some shoes.
Yeah, these shoes are walking away on us.
Five finger discount. But look at this. This is incredible what they did. And then they sold, they took it IPO. Harry's going to talk to us about that.
Yeah.
And then they eventually sold to Foot Locker. And Dick Johnson, who was hired by Harry Colcord himself.
And longtime Wausaunian.
Became the CEO of Foot Locker up until a couple of years ago.
And he, I think, moved to New York in the Ivory Tower and CEO'd out of there. For a while.
Here's on page 25 of the 1997 East Bay catalog, you've got an Iowa AM/FM cassette stereo. Looks like some sort of Walkman.
Okay. They sold those too.
And then right next to it is the actual Sony Walkman, the yellow one. See?
Yeah, that's the branded Walkman.
$57 in 1997. And here's the one that your dad used to use while he was mowing the lawn. The Sony Walkman headphones.
Yeah, it's just headphones. You don't need to carry that dumb box around.
So we're going to talk to Harry Colcord, part one of our East Bay special.
Should be fun.
Art and Rick have agreed to come on. We just don't have it set up yet.
Let's get that date locked
Get it locked in, boys. Oh, this went to... This catalog actually went to Crystal Johnson from Tampa, Florida.
Okay. Well, it's made its way around the country.
In 1997, Crystal Johnson lived at 7702 New York Drive in Tampa, Florida.
I wonder if she still lives there. Does it have a phone number on there? Let's give her a call. Okay, no. Okay.
Or current resident.
Oh, fair.
Go to Crystal or current resident.
Fair, fair, fair.
So we'll hear all about the rise of East Bay from Harry Colcord, the former president and CEO, next on the Wausau Business Show. Strap on those Air Force Ones and let's go.
Let's do it.
Foot like I'm looking like I need those 10 and a half, and if you got them, give me 2 of those.
Wausau Business Show,
the number one show for and about Wausau, every Saturday morning 8 to 9, and available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Alexa. Visit wausaubusiness.com for more details.
What does it take to run a successful business? It takes incredible courage to start at the beginning, incredible grit to achieve success, incredible determination to sustain results, and incredible perseverance to leave a legacy. But most importantly, it takes an incredible local partner dedicated to helping you achieve your goals. At Incredible Bank, we are that partner. Let us help your business do the incredible. Incredible Bank, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Jude.
And I'm Jack.
And you're listening to our dad, Ryan.
And Mrs. James.
And I'm Emmy.
And you're listening to our dad, Paul.
On and the...
No, you say the.
Okay.
The...
Wausau Business Show!
The Wausau Business Show.
Sit outside, arguing all night long. God, we've never seen, but never fails to side with me. Sunday comes and all the papers say, Mom Teresa's joined the mob and happy with her full-time job.
What do you say to your sons?
That after all of your work is done, you have one final job, which is to take care of your body.
Amen.
And if you fail, it's just a very bad thing.
If you don't mind, how many years are you clocking in now, Harry?
I'm 74.
Oh, still a young man.
Spry 74.
Well, and I'm planning. Yeah, I'm hoping. I don't know if you can see the picture of the guy behind me, but he was my co-worker. He was 82 when I was 14 as a janitor at St. Anne's Grade School, and he lived to be 100.
Wow.
And 4'11", fought for the Prussians in World War I, but born in 1883, and I drew that picture in 1888. And it was even before my sons, it was the first one I hung in the gym, because he always reminded me that if you talk about your health, you're probably not spending enough time taking care of it.
Yeah, all so, talk, no action.
Yeah, and he drank every day, which I also do. So he's my hero.
He's a good Prussian.
What's his name?
His name was Mike Hartle. He was he retired. He owned a farm in Fenwood near Stratford, and he retired at 82. And his wife was only 69, and she said, "You're still a little too frisky. Can you go get a job?" So we were janitors together at St. Anne's, and in an era where, by the way, when the lead janitor showed me how you clean the toilets in the elementary school, he stuck my hand in the somewhat disgusting toilet and said, "When you're done, I should be able to eat out of it." So I've also always said, if I ever have to go back to any job, you know, with that as my first, I think I can handle most things.
How old were you when you retired?
48.
Wow. This guy's
like a dream come true.
But I stayed active. You know, I ran the 238 unit condo association for 20 years. When it came time for us to make the decision to sell East Bay, it really was. We none of us expected to have done as well as we did with the God-given talent we had. So it was let's relax. I did go down to Miami and I ran a .com where in 2000 I was offered $5 million and a 10% stake to take the thing public.
Okay.
And it was worth $100 million in early March. And then a 27-year-old banker from Wasserstein Perella called from New York the Monday after the market crashed and said, "It's not worth $1 million anymore." And I said, "Well, since I'm no longer talking to a senior vice president, I assume that."
Well, let's start at the beginning. First of all, Mr. Harry Colcord, everybody.
Yeah. Welcome.
Live from Illinois, Wausau business legend, Harry Colcord. Thanks for coming on the Wausau Business Show.
Pleasure to have you.
We're going to get into all sorts of stuff, but why don't we start at the beginning? So you were born and raised in Wausau?
I was born and raised in Wausau on August 10th, 1951, which just seems like yesterday.
It does, doesn't it?
What did your mom and dad do for a living?
My dad was a furnace repairman, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And I was the middle of five kids, which I've always said with an older brother, older sister, younger sister, I had the only chance of coming out normal.
Yeah, you were balanced.
The middle has the best shot.
Yeah. And so you went to, you wound up going to, you know, Catholic grade school and Catholic high school, graduate from Newman High School, right? Go Cardinals.
Go Cardinals,
right?
But I was not, I always say to people that you still have a shot, even though I think I finished 159 out of 161 in my class at Newman.
You still graduated.
The true comedy comes in the fact that there used to be these farcical votes every year. And in my class, I was voted least likely to succeed.
Oh.
And the next year, 1969, Art Yiddis got the same award.
Oh, God, really?
Like we were destined to be together, and we actually, our social security numbers are only one digit apart at the end.
No.
And he was born, you know, a year after me.
Oh, that is wild.
So and you, least likely to succeed.
You guys knew each other in high school then, obviously.
Yes. And yeah, Art was an athlete, a good baseball player. I was a smoker, a drinker, and as I said, I earned the vote least likely to succeed.
Okay. And so you graduated from high school, and then where did you go?
Then remember, this is the Vietnam era.
Yeah.
Okay. The war. And so going to college seemed like a good idea, even though the Newman counselor, Father McGinnis, said, "Stay in the factory." And my dad, I had started working at Wausau Metals at age 16. Mm. My dad also said, "Stay in the factory. Maybe you'll be a foreman someday." But when I got to Point, with the tuition being, I think, $700 a year.
UWSP.
I had to pay for it out of my factory earnings at Wausau Metals. And after one kind of lousy semester, I hunkered down and did really well for the remaining 3.5 years.
Okay. And then you graduate with a business degree?
Graduated with a degree in history and political science, planned to go to law school, was lousy at the LSAT, the law school aptitude test. So I stayed in the factory for another year and a half. So I worked in the factory at Wausau Metals for over 5 years.
Mm. And then eventually you get into the Apogee Group.
Well, Wausau Metals was, when I was in the shop, Larry Niederhofer, who was a name most people in Wausau know, came over from Minneapolis and told us that the owner, Glenn Straub, had left the building and was not coming back. he would stay with us for 6 months. And I thought, this guy's a complete nerd. I'm glad I'm getting the hell out of here. So I stayed in the shop, did all kinds of different factory jobs, learned how to, you know, weld. And
yeah, knew it up and down.
And then one day he came out to, and he said, you seem like a rabble rouser. And I see that you graduated with high honors. How would you like to try to learn to be an estimator? And in my background, I got an F at Newman in algebra as a sophomore.
God.
And I only had one C and one D in college, and the C was in business math.
Okay.
So, you know, but keep in mind that back in this era, 1973, there were only four of us in the whole building out of 35 employees at Wausau Metals that had college degrees.
Yeah, yeah. It was really special. Hot currency.
Something different, yeah.
So you get into estimating and get into management and work your way up into the role of president over the next, 10 years, 15 years?
Well, I was in sales, and I cracked a couple of accounts that in Texas and in Nebraska that made me a shining star with Niederhofer.
Okay.
And so when we started Nanic, the wood blind business, that ends up being my most difficult job ever, because I was 26 years old. We started with 30 people. We had no automation. Every noon, all of the people in the office would go out and stain slats and lacquer. And so we had to automate a whole industry that had not existed since before the Civil War.
Nanic windows, and they made blinds.
Nanic wood blinds.
Nanic blinds.
Which I ran that from 78 to 81, and then I was offered the group president role for what was then Wausau Metals, Milco, Nanic. In 82, we started Line Tech.
Yeah, they started Line Tech in 1982.
And you were 30 years old or something like that?
I was 31.
31, wow.
And it became this consortium of businesses.
Yes, and then with Nanic, we also then bought something called the Shuttery of Phoenix. The factory there, who John Schaefer, who, if you don't know, has gone on to tremendous success, like Dick Johnson that worked for us at East Bay.
Johnson, just retired, I think a couple of years ago, was the global CEO from Wausau.
Moved out to New York City.
Foot Locker globally.
Chairman of the board and CEO.
Yeah.
And I always remind him that in 1992, we hired him from Grable as a financial modeler for $52,000 a year.
What a deal.
I won't share numbers, but he's worth more than that now.
Yeah. Well, you talk about the coaching tree that they talk about in the NFL, all the coaches that come out of the different famous coaches. Talk about the coaches that came out of and the business leaders that came out of Grable.
Yeah.
I mean, that is an amazing family tree.
Dave was a heck of a guy. I actually interviewed with Dave once when he wanted to hire me to train his sons to run the business. And I said, what happens if I succeed? And he said, well, I'll give you 3% of the business, but then we'd have to let you go.
Come train
some
my
deal.
Sons to be successful so you can be out of a job.
Right.
When did your famous signature white glasses start, Harry? That's a real brand thing.
Real iconic at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. About 11 years ago, my girlfriend and Teresa and I were at a shop in Miami Beach. And I tried them on just as kind of a gag. And people said, those look really good on you. And then someone said, and they match your hair and your shirt.
Harry has his signature white glasses on today.
Yeah.
So
looking good.
So then at some point, Art and Rick approach you to join East Bay.
Yeah. How does that work?
It's kind of a fun story. Niederhofer, who was willing to serve as one of the presidents, had been approached by them because he was a part of a group that was the landlord for the 400 block.
Yeah.
That East Bay was housed.
Yeah. East Bay used to be on the 400 block.
Right. It wasn't always a concert square.
Right.
Right.
No. And in fact, I have a coin that I've taken a picture of that I flipped when I couldn't get these two guys to agree, because they were like oil and water. I mean, I love them both, but they couldn't agree on anything. And I finally said, I'm going to flip this quarter. And if it's heads, we're buying the Prangiway building. And if it's tails, we're tearing down this whole block and building a corporate headquarters.
And this was Art and Rick.
Yeah, and it's heads. And on the bottom of this inscription, it says, Art was still praying for an edge landing. So you won't find two better people in this world. But, you know, they grew up 2 days apart, 2 houses apart. While we were partners at the end, I was a junior partner, but I've now said they were a partner in a visceral sense that not many people could understand. They are
like brothers
with their wives. They are brothers, best friends. And I was a new business partner. And when Niederhofer said, you know, if you guys are in trouble, Harry runs the businesses as our group president, but he also is in charge of all of the planning. He coordinates all the planning for each division each year, both operational and strategic. So maybe you want to spend some time with him. And Art knew me.
Yeah.
So we spent Saturdays in my basement off and on for a year.
What year was this?
1992. Okay. 1991. And I still have the original copy where I said to him, you guys are incredible entrepreneurs. The reason that you're not making money while your sales are growing is that you're hiring too many consultants. Your cost of money is out of control. Your personal guarantee, you need some professional management. So for the next few months, this was September of 91. For the next few months, I helped them. We tried to interview people. They wanted to have somebody come from within, but didn't know that that would work. And then in, I think, April of 92, when they were still on the fence, Apogee said, you know, Harry, you've got 9 companies. You're in over your head. We got to take one away. So Niederhofer took Wausau Specialties away from me, and I had created it to do polished stainless steel and bronze. And so I got pissed off and said to Rick and Art, I'll join you.
Let's go.
How old were you at this point?
41.
41, and how big was Apogee Group at that time?
Well, we had 1,200 employees, 9 companies. I don't remember the sales, but the classic was when I made the decision. I don't know if you guys remember the name John Ulrich from Wisley Ulrich.
Sure.
Yeah.
When I announced that I was leaving Apogee to join East Bay, John Ulrich came up to me at a meeting and said, Harry, what the hell happened? You were a captain of industry, and now they tell me that you're going to sell shoes. while I told people that, you know, East Bay was doing $27 million a year.
Yeah,
so right.
Their sales were formidable.
Yeah.
But they had not made any amount over what they had made 4 previous years each year. So Rick and Art said, if we can entice you to join us, we'll pay you 25% of everything over what we've made in the past, which was a couple million. Well, the first year we doubled the profit.
Wow.
The next year we doubled it again. And then based on our need for capital, we obviously had to extend our line of credit for inventory. And then they said, is there any, we don't have the money to pay you. And I said, well, I always thought that if we could convert debt to equity, I'll be your junior partner. And so at that juncture, it came up, we valued the business. I got 12.53% and said, I will never ask you for another percent, no matter what we do, because you put in 10 years of sweat equity to create an incredible company that now just needs a little tweaking. So I'll be junior partner and I will never vote with one of you against the other. And we say to this day that we never did.
So
we always, no matter how long it took,
you always voted in mass in block. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then we expanded to different things.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Apogee Group public when you left then? Did you take?
Sure.
So you took Apogee Group public during your time there as well?
No. The founder of Apogee, Russ Baumgartner, was one of the original members of the NASDAQ board. So I'm guessing probably served with Bernie Madoff.
Shame on me for not doing that research properly. Well,
Bernie Madoff.
But, yeah. I mean, the company had gone public in 73, and they had purchased Wausau Metals in 69.
Okay.
So they were already formidable. And Russ, I mean, if this was a guy who I've said I learned a lot because he would throw you the ball. And he'd throw it over his shoulder and never look back to see if you caught it.
I said to him,
Russ, this is the most intimidating trust I can imagine.
Yeah.
How can I let you down? And his classic was, I'll spend anything, Harry, that you tell me to spend money on, as long as you can guess at how much I'll get back if it's a complete failure.
Yeah, zero. So he was instrumental, I'm assuming, when you were in that zone of potentially taking East Bay public. Were you drawing on his influences and the learnings that from him or the connection?
No, I belonged to YPO, Young Presidents.
Yeah.
And a guy named Fred Kasten was the chairman of the board of Robert W. Baird and a good friend. Mm. And Piper Jaffray had followed Apogee. So I, as a group president with Niederhofer, we would host, you know, analysts who would come in. So I got a feel, you understood that you had to run the business differently than if you were a private business. So when I joined Rick and Art, I said, we may never go public. Nothing may come of this, but we're going to run this business like it's a public company.
Okay.
We're going to... Everything's going to be transparent, and anyone who wants to know anything, we will tell, because my belief is that we will do things so well that no matter what they understand us to be doing, they can't copy it. They won't have our staff. They won't have our commitment.
So when you joined East Bay, they had been in existence for about a decade at that point. They yes. started out of their, why don't you tell us about how they started, Art and Rick?
Yeah, they started out of their car. They had gone to a store in Milwaukee called East Bay. And ended up buying the product through the East Bay Milwaukee store because no one would sell you if you didn't have, you know, if you weren't incorporated or an LLC. So this guy they knew helped Rick and Art and Don Trebitowski, who was also the third partner. And the comical part is the guy who brought the idea to them decided that he would go on and work for a different company and didn't join the partnership. So
it's like the first drummer of the Beatles or something.
You know? Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if he has regrets, because I know that Don Trebitowski has no regrets about ending his partnership, but he was very instrumental in the success of East Bay for the first 10 years, handled the operations, the banking relationships, just a really, really important and good guy.
So what were Art and Rick doing prior to starting East Bay, and how did that come about again? Like, why did it, were they into that industry, into shoes, into jogging? I know Rick, there's, yeah.
You know, Rick, the Gehring family are sprinters of some renown, and so is Don Trebitowski. So Rick had been on a 10-year mission to get a degree. And,
that's right.
was still hanging around the track group at UW Stevens Point. Art, I said, had been a ball player, and he was a teacher and coach down in southern Wisconsin.
Okay.
So this was something that interested them, but, you know, not something that you would say was a vision.
Uh-huh.
It was something to do.
Yeah, okay. And then in Milwaukee, talk to us about that part of it.
Yeah, there was a company called East Bay.
The business was called East Bay, and the guy who had started it was from the East Bay of Traverse City, Michigan.
Okay.
So he named the store that. Then he sold it to a family named Rodez, okay. R-O-D-I-E-Z. And when I got to East Bay, and I said to Rick and Art, why don't we put trademark on our catalog? Where is your intellectual property file?
Yeah.
And they both looked at each other, and if they were sitting next to you, they would be laughing because they said, Harry, we don't have an intellectual property file.
Okay. So, but were they running this business in Milwaukee then? They acquired it from this guy?
No, they just used that store as a name so that they could buy from the shoe companies.
Okay.
The real misgiving in what they did is that my ex-wife, Deborah, the attorney, and I had to drive down to Milwaukee to meet the Rodez family and say, can we buy the trade name East Bay? And the guy, when we walked in, the guy said, you son of a bitch, every time the phone rings, it's somebody thinking they're going to order from our catalog, but we don't have a catalog. And you can get the name East Bay one of two ways. He was 5'7" and a former boxer. He said, you, Harry, can go into the ring with me, and whoever walks out gets the name exclusively, or you can give me $1 million. And so
did you kick his ass?
I said, we don't have $1 million.
So I'm going to have to kick your ass.
And the one thing I can assure you I'm not going to do is get into a boxing ring. So, let us get back to you. Eventually, we bought the name East Bay for $150,000.
But I'm struggling to understand. Rick and Art had this catalog at the time, and they wanted to buy the East Bay name, or they used East Bay to get product, or I missed that connection.
They used East Bay to get product. And because their purchase orders with Nike and Reebok and others said East Bay Running Store,
uh-huh.
When they created, first they went to the fields of play and they had shoes in the trunk. Well, then the coaches would say, players aren't all here. Can you leave any kind of a flyer?
Okay.
So then they left a flyer with the name East Bay on it. And then as other people wanted to get the same flyer, It struck them that they might want to do a catalog.
So how did they get the shoes in the first place? They went down to Milwaukee and just decided to pick up these shoes and start distributing them up in the Wausau area?
Yeah. The first purchase was from the store in Milwaukee, and then the guy in Milwaukee let them order with the name East Bay, but with a location which was eventually the Meerman, across from the Meerman Furniture Store.
Oh, yeah, Meerman's in Wausau.
Yeah, hey now.
So that's where they, you know, they had this little storefront, and they would take turns in the storefront. One would go to the farmer's bar and have a couple drinks and then come back, and then the other one would take turns, and that was their early beginnings.
Good routine.
And they go around, they pass out these flyers, and then they said, well, golly, people want a catalog.
Right.
Okay. Now they don't know anything about building a catalog, I'm assuming, at the time, right?
Right.
How did
right.
they no, how they, did they do that?
They ended up, they were ingenious in that they ended up making things just, you know, typed with the name and the phone number. And then they realized that they needed to have a couple operators in the store. And the word of mouth, the fact that kids were so unbelievably interested in seeing what was different in an array of products would end up being something that was illuminating to me later on. But for them, it was, they just kept getting phone calls.
Okay.
So as they got phone calls, I mean, I once said to the president of Reebok, we get 3 million unsolicited requests for a catalog every year.
Wow.
New kid. Yeah. Where will you find these kids? How will you find them? And Rick and Art said that, you know, as when I joined them, they were still dominantly Midwest.
With the catalog distribution. And they were dominant in the Midwest and still getting 3 million Reebok leads, basically?
No, that came, you know, the number 3 million occurred about 1993. If Shaq joined the league in 93, that was like a banner year for us, because we got 3 million catalog requests. We had Shaq on television telling the chairman of Reebok that, thanks for offering me that above the rim shirt, but I bought that last week at East Bay.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
When that's on the news. So, and as the story went, Nike wouldn't sell them much of anything. But as that Shaq story went, we convinced Reebok to give us 200 of the Shaq shoes and sold them. They were uglier than hell. We sold all 125 in one, or 200 pair in one day at $125. And the president of Nike, who was actually, he was the global vice president of sales, Gary DeStefano, called me and said, why did you put that ugly shoe on page 3? And I said, because it's the best product we've had, and you won't give us Air products. You won't give us anything. You won't give us Jordan.
Yeah.
And so from that point, we had set the hook, bound Nike in, and ended up creating, we produced Nike's catalog for them.
Yeah.
And became the exclusive marketer of Nike products through catalog.
And did you, obviously you must have had meetings with Nike founder, Phil Knight then at some point.
Oh my goodness. They offered us $70 million to buy us out in about 93, and we had done a few of their catalogs. So when we met with him, he said,
Phil Knight said,
what's the response rate on the Nike catalog? We said 2.5%. What's the response rate on the East Bay catalog? We said 3%. He said, what does that tell you? He said, it tells me that if you buy us, and Adidas and Fila and Reebok and ASICS all cut you off, you're going to have a 2.5% response rate, but you will have blown $70 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, guys, we don't want to buy East Bay. We want to, he said, Harry, I'll tell you this. You guys do a catalog for us in 2 months. It takes my staff 6 months to approve a picture. He said, we need you for what you are, not for what we would agree.
So you join East Bay and Art and Rick in 1991.
May of 1992.
And a year later, you're producing Nike's catalog?
Well, it was about a year and a half. Yeah, and then we saw, I mean, if you keep your eyes open in the world, there are lots of opportunities that you think are not available. But when we looked at the Sports Illustrated catalog called the NFL,
yeah,
they were selling keychains. And so I called Time Warner Building and talked to the guy who was running the NFL shop. And I said, you have 19 teams, not 30, which there were at the time.
Yeah.
You're selling keychains. If you understand the business as well as I hope you do, the bill and fill is $9. And you're selling this for $3?
Yeah, right. You're taking a loss.
Can't charge enough freight. And
right.
So I said to Rick and Art, I'm going to fly out there. And we bought all the inventory from Sports Illustrated and then created 30 NFL catalogs for all 30 teams. So that was a part of East Bay and Foot Locker until Dick Johnson and crew ended the relationship a few years ago.
all out of Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
Yeah, amazing.
Yes.
Were you involved in, I'm assuming you were involved somewhere along there to buy the domain eastbay.com and start the e-commerce website operation?
Yeah, I have the original note from our meeting. I think it's in August of 95 that says this is, you know, if we follow this route, we should be able to start selling something online in 6 months.
Yeah.
And yet, we, you know, there was no interactive inventory. All we could do is take an order and then batch process it in the middle of the night if we actually found that we had the products, because we had, in that era, we had 8 different warehouses. And Don Trebatowski ran that. So we knew where things were, but it was not as seamless as today where, you know, I wrote in 1997, somebody's going to have a gotcha button on your TV remote, and you're going to point at a pair of shoes on TV and you'll get them.
Well, yeah, while we're here.
97. Yeah. We hadn't envisioned the QR, the quick response had not yet been created.
And what was the first moment that you kind of talked about taking the company public?
From the beginning.
Yeah.
That was always the plan.
We looked at private equity, but the private equity players, you know, if you venture capitalists want a big say in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the prospect of, you know, we had $20 million in debt that we would hit every year, and we'd have to occasionally get out of the bank. I ended up firing M&I and went with a different bank that gave us LIBOR ratings instead of.
Which bank did you go with, Harry?
We went with what was then First Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. Well, didn't they eventually come together or not? First Wisconsin
It all worked for them, and it all worked for us. And
but when you joined with Art and Rick, you said, we're going to run this like a public company. And was their exit strategy and your exit strategy in doing that, presumably to say, because we're going to eventually take this public, that's our exit strategy?
No, never. No, we had no exit strategy. I mean, when I hired John Schaefer, he had been my accountant at Apogee. And what I said to him is, you know, you're used to all of the strict requirements that make things transparent. And so we're going to slice and dice this thing analytically every way possible. And the algorithms are going to tell us where we mail, when we mail, when we've reached saturation, what we do for new products in new markets, what we do for going to new markets, which we, you know, Japan at one point was 10% of our business.
Japan.
You're kidding.
Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we made the arrangement through Sony's headquarters in Tokyo. And a woman, Chikako Massey, whose husband Dennis used to be the dean at the school, was one of the only fluent Japanese people in Wausau. So we made her our international marketing manager. And
smart.
As I say, we ended up with 10% of our business coming out of Sony in Tokyo.
Crazy.
So did you approach the New York Stock Exchange and just knock on their door one day and say, we'd like to now take this company public? Or how does that work?
No, we interviewed, we had 3 interviews with bankers.
So you were constantly getting approached, I'm assuming, to sell the business in the first place, right?
As the story, Rick and Art had always been very close to the belt with everybody. They didn't want to have anybody know anything about East Bay because they were afraid that it was going to, you know, cause too much scrutiny, too much involvement, too many people asking for things.
Okay.
And you know, I mean, they just, like I said, they're just good guys who, you know, didn't think of the business as anything else, but this is what we do.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Merrill Lynch sent a proposal saying, you know, we'll dress you up in a manner that the world will love you. And we said, the three of us said, we don't want to be dressed up for the world to love us.
We're just Wausau guys.
We want to be, you know, we want to be transparent. My oldest adage in business was, you sell your BS, you never buy your own BS. Only a fool
right.
does that.
Yeah.
So then the guys from Baird and the women from Piper Jaffray made their pitches. And because of the closeness with Fred Kasten, who was an absolutely wonderful chairman and president of Baird, we chose Baird, and then they dress you up. But they dress you up in a way that is in a manner that you would say a Midwesterner in business.
Consistent with your Midwestern values, yeah. So, yeah. But they're the ones then that said, we want to take you public, and they kind of sold you three on the idea?
Yeah, and then we traveled to 57 different road shows where we talked about the company. And in hindsight, I can tell you this, we went public in September of 1995. We didn't get one question about selling on the internet.
Wow.
Nobody cared. We brought it up. And the thing that they were most fascinated by was that we would hold up one of the Shaq shoes, size 21.
Yeah.
And then we would hold up an infant shoe and say, we cover both ends of the spectrum. But the thing that makes us unique is that unlike any store that can only house so much inventory, we sell 200,000 pairs of shoes, size 13 to 18 every year.
Yeah, imagine if you had the brick and mortar instead of the catalog, what the overhead would be on that, right?
Well, and if you consider the marketing value of that, what we said to Nike and Reebok is, if we know who wears size 15, we know who the next basketball star is.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll tell you, I mean, the implications for knowledge at that level.
Wow.
Yeah, no one imagined AI. So yeah. These were things that we could dice and slice in a manner that would say to them, you know, this part of this inner city that calls us the Bible, the book, which is what they...
The East Bay catalog was known as, yeah.
The book.
Yeah.
And when Fila wouldn't sell to us, they did a survey in Washington, D.C., and the president called us afterwards and said, do you know that you're known as the Bible, the book of sports? And we said, no, but we have a great following. And so, again, if you're Nike, if you're Reebok, or if you're a fashion brand, you want to hit that segment of the audience that, you know, you don't know where they live. We right. know where they live because they sent us a catalog request or they called us.
And they gave you their age, presumably, as well, and things like that, right?
14 to 24. And how many, you know, if you're 14 to 18, how many pieces of mail do you get?
Not many.
And you have a foot that fits that shoe size. Right. You're in the target audience for recruiting, I suppose, for the NBA.
Yeah.
So then you take this thing public, thanks in part to Baird, and you become CEO of Foot Locker buys you and you stay.
Well, right. But time out. We were not planning on selling to anybody. Nike had made it clear starting in about 97 that they wanted to sell direct to consumers. Phil Knight once screamed in a meeting, my worst problem is not my suppliers, not my staff. It's my customers. Retailers will take, and he screamed at Roger Farah, who was at that point chairman of Woolworth, of Foot Locker. He screamed at him in a manner that Roger said, you know, I used to be the CEO of Bloomingdale's, and normally when I talk to suppliers, they kiss my ass. They don't yell at me.
Right.
But Phil said, the only way for us to gain control is for us to be able to sell the product direct.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a threat. You know, and a guy named Hagel wrote a book called Net Gain. And Net Gain said to manufacturers, basically, to survive, you need to control your own destiny. You need to consider how you will sell direct.
He was promoting selling direct. Okay.
Right. And then we had heard about this little company called Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Startup.
The rumor was that they were going to start giving free freight. And we said, okay, freight is one third of our profit. If we give away free freight as a public company, our stock price will plummet. Because you don't lose one third of your profits without having a really big adverse effect in the market. And then Foot Locker, the guys from Foot Locker I had met at other meetings, and a guy named Bill DeVries, who was the president of Foot Locker, said, Harry, we'd either like to buy you or bury you. And I thought of Nikita Khrushchev and said, it didn't work for Khrushchev. I think we're okay. So they courted us. In fact, right before we went public, Rick and Art and I, and I think John Schaefer and Dick Johnson, had a dinner at Sparks Steakhouse in New York.
Well, I was hoping you were going to say the Wagon Wheel in Wausau, but okay, Sparks Steakhouse in New York.
You guys should buy the Wagon
Wheel. Anyway, okay, all right, another story. Let's move on.
The reality was that it was clear that every manufacturer, every retailer saw that this direct-to-consumer business had big margin prospects, especially the manufacturer, because now you're cutting out the 50% that the retailer is taking.
Right. Yeah.
And as we did the analysis, and I have a separate booklet that I'm writing on, Rick and Art are doing a beautiful kind of a memorial.
Yeah.
And Harvard's doing it.
Harvard Business
Review. I've heard of it.
Coming out.
And they've said nice things, and I appreciate that. But there's like 14 reasons why when it came time to sell, it was compelling. And I went back to 1991 when I handed them my review of their business. And I said, you will ultimately fail because at some juncture, manufacturers don't need a conduit called retail.
Mm.
And in life, if you don't need a conduit, if you can connect the source to whatever is required and eliminate that conduit, you've just saved a big chunk of money.
Yeah, they're talking about getting rid of the middleman.
You always get rid of the middleman. You know, because I had said to them in 1991, while this is a foregone conclusion, we don't know how the timing will work because we don't know how the technologies might develop. Mm-hmm. But Dick Johnson called me 20 years after I retired and said, you know, Harry, everything that you predicted in 2000 is now coming to reality.
Right.
And I said, then I was a fool because I asked that we depart the party way too soon.
Yeah.
And Rick and Art, you know, I hope that you'll talk to them because, as I say, they're two of the best people you'll ever meet. Mm-hmm. And they did all of the yeoman's work for the entrepreneurial phase. And Drucker always defined an entrepreneur as a monomaniac on a mission. Well, they were two monomaniacs and they accomplished their mission. But it was a sad day that we sold.
It was said, even though you sold, you know, and everybody got paid and he made you very wealthy and everybody, but it was like giving your baby up for adoption in a way.
If you do what you love, your work isn't the job. It is your vacation. It is. You enjoy going there every day. And I think, well, Art will tell you that he was a little nervous. Rick would tell you that basically we sold his baby. Everyone that worked there, I think, I can't say everyone because we did have to career adjust some people, but
career adjust.
I like that term.
Everyone liked East Bay because Rick and Art had created this tremendous story, and we had added staff and we had added programs that made it fun every year.
Yeah. And when you guys went public, how many employees did you have and what was your revenue at that point?
I think when we went public, the revenue was $150 million. And we probably had 1,500 to 2,000 employees. We had call centers in Wausau, Oshkosh, and Green Bay.
And you did stay on as CEO for Foot Locker, right?
Part of the contract was to stay 3 years as CEO. And then the group that we developed was so much better than we were that at the end of 3 years, it was easy to say, it's time to do something else. I don't do anything here anymore. And Rick and Art would say the same thing.
We don't, just walking around. You know,
when you have such good people doing so many good things, you get bored.
Did they stay on too, or did they depart immediately?
They left. Their contracts were a little shorter, but they stayed on. And we all admitted that we really didn't have much to do anymore. We were part of creating something good. Mm-hmm. But you know, like in everything in life, including life, things go in cycles. And it's when you know that it's time to move on, that you probably use your creative juices to the maximum of your ability. Mm-hmm. You know, then you just fold shop and maybe try something else.
Yeah. Well, just think about what was accomplished here from Wausau, Wisconsin, USA. It changed sneaker culture. It changed strategies for all the biggest brands in the United States.
It changed commerce, generally speaking.
It was considered, I mean, it was the most famous sports catalog in U.S. history, I think, to this day. And why they, you know, what are your thoughts on them not having the catalog anymore, Harry?
Well, it wouldn't pay. The catalog was, you know, when Spiegel catalog, and I studied a lot about catalogs, but when Spiegel catalog was run by Hank Johnson, Hank said, we'll create a couple of different women's fashions a year that are exclusive to us and make women in business feel special. But what we did, and you know, to this day, it's embarrassing because people will refer to us as, you know, something that was really special in their life.
Yeah.
And we still think of it as, you know, we did things well, but by no means did we really know what we were doing. One of the guys who runs a $1 billion sports agency, and tell me when time's up, because this was kind of a cute, but
we've got all day. We've got all day. We've got great people here at Rocket Industrial, Harry. We don't
have anything to do.
We just walk around all day.
You're both bored too. That's great. Terry feeds cats down in South Beach, feral cats. So we're sitting in a bar.
Terry is your significant other.
Teresa. Yeah. Terry Dears. Yeah. Yeah. And so we're sitting at a bar and a guy walks by with his dog and she says, "Hi, Oreo." And the guy, the owner, said, "How do you know my dog?" And she said, "Well, I feed the feral cats in the morning." And he said, "Oh, my God, I thought you were homeless." And he said, you are absolutely gorgeous. You look like Audrey Hepburn. And then he looked at me and said, what's a guy like you doing with a girl like that? And I said,
feels good.
I'm very lucky. And he said, what did you do for a living? And I said, I ran a catalog called East Bay. And he stopped and shouted in this bar, we have fame in our presence.
Yeah, true.
And then later on, I learned that he runs this. He started like this billion-dollar sports business. So he's friends with Shaq, with Michael Jordan. And we're hoping maybe to do something at some point. But the point is, nobody in Wausau, Wisconsin that was involved in East Bay ever, no one ever bought our own bullshit. We never would have thought that somebody who was a big deal would think you're a big deal, because we're from Wausau. And if Art and Rick and I were voted least likely to succeed, Rick wouldn't have even been on the ballot. So it's a, we were kind of the losers who made good.
Well, you guys basically created a international brand. It would be
an
like
industry.
It'd be like if the Backstreet Boys were from Wausau, Wisconsin. You guys are the Backstreet Boys of the catalog sporting industry.
Right.
Yeah. And again, we looked at the,
I don't know.
We were lucky enough in Wausau, Wisconsin to hire people that, unlike, I use the example of a factory we bought in Phoenix, Arizona called the Shuttery. And John Schaefer was the president. And he called me one day and just said, Harry, people in Phoenix will spend more time interviewing for a job in an air conditioned office than they will working once I hire them. We got to move this factory. And so we moved it to Wausau, Wisconsin, because Wausau, Wisconsin has people who see work as something that's normal, that they can enjoy, that they can, communicate with each other over, that they can give recommendations and they'll be heard.
Harry, what do you miss most about Wausau?
I mean, I will always be part of Wausau. I still have great friends, and I don't know if you guys know Lauren Jorsted from Jim Lockdorf, Channel 9. They came down to
They golf. Should rebuy Channel 9, Lauren Jorsted.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah.
It's for sale again, by the way. It's for sale. Let them know.
Lauren ran it, to the heights that I think at one point Lauren was running like 9 stations, including Honolulu.
He probably hired Melissa Langbin
or Kelly Schultz.
Yeah. He did hire Melissa Langbin, and that was a great story. But as I say, I mean, if you want to talk about somebody who says, I'm just a little guy from the hollow, a Lauren Jorsted is no different than most of us from East Bay, where, it's cold in the winter, so you're not afraid to work hard.
Right.
And the people, there's enough of a pool to draw from so that you can get really great talent without searching beyond the community.
Yeah.
And the number of success stories, when we started Leadership Wausau, which I co-chaired with Barney Vissi, Jerry Visti's wife.
Yeah, that was through the Chamber of Commerce, was it?
I was president of the Chamber of Commerce in 1987.
Yeah.
And Linda Prane, the Dr. Prane's wife, brought this concept from Michigan. And when we started it, we all said,
it was called Leadership Wausau. Sorry to interrupt, but Leadership Wausau.
Okay. It is so important that we tell all of the stories of all of the people that came before us, because what it says is, this is a real good breeding ground for success.
Amen.
Well, that's why we started the Wausau Business Show.
Yeah.
All right,
Harry, last question. Sam's or Angelo's?
Oh, boy, the tough one. We saved the toughest for last.
Angelo was one of probably my 3 best friends of all time.
Yeah.
And we did everything together for years, and I loved him. And there was nothing more insulting than I could have done than take a Sam's pizza to his house, but I did.
Well, does that answer that question? Is that the answer?
When I was a welder at Wausau Metals, Tony Perella would give me 2 large pizza gift certificates if I would weld cones for him to stuff sausage.
Tony Perella, the founder of Sam's Pizza. Yep.
Well, his brother, Sam, was the founder.
Okay, but, right.
Tony would show me that the real key to the sausage is you use fennel, not anise.
Oh, okay. Hot take.
And by the way, I mean, I'll toot my horn one further, because I hung around with these Italian guys. I was published as a chef in Bon Appetit.
Yes, I wanted to bring that up. Hold on. Don't tell me.
Including their yearbook. So
It was for fettuccine with brie and bacon in 2004. He was published
2004.
Harry Colcord in Bon Appetit magazine, his recipe.
Including the yearbook. And because that was my friends that taught me were like Carmi Oliva, Virgil Landretti, Jimmy Iozzo.
Jimmy Iozzo.
Jimmy Lombardo.
Legends.
Legends.
Angelo Volpe and Tony Perella early on, but they were so insulted that Angelo had T-shirts made that were distributed around Wausau that say, "Brie cheese causes impotency."
A smear campaign against Brie cheese.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Harry Colfer.
No, it's been fun.
Wow. Wausau business icon, legend, East Bay phenomenon. Harry Colfer, thanks for coming on, Harry.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Take care.
Love you.
Take care.
Well, I've been looking real hard and I'm trying to find a job, but it just gets getting tougher.
Business Show.
The Wausau Business Show.
With Ryan and Paul.
Ryan Gallagher.
And Paul Grinsell.
The Wausau Business Show.
For over 130 years, Ameriprise Financial has helped millions of Americans retire on their terms by providing advice for their unique goals. Stop in today at Strongbridge Wealth Advisors, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Advisors, LLC, and develop a customized plan for your retirement. Call Strongbridge Wealth at 715-849-3697. Office is located at 2711 Stewart Avenue, Wausau, Wisconsin. Visit us online at strongbw.com. Not FDIC or NCUA insured. No financial institution guarantee. May lose value. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
The number one show for Wausau and you. Plus, we love the Green Bay Packers, too.
Go Pack, go!
It's the Wausau Business Show with Ryan and Paul.
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good. I would call her.
It's all Wausau all the time. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wausau Business Show. Paul, we forgot to ask Harry the obvious question. I'm just going to call him up here.
Get him on the horn then.
Harry?
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah. Harry, hey, how you doing?
Life is still good.
Okay, good. We forgot to ask you a question when you were on the horn with us.
Go ahead.
What's your favorite shoe of all time?
Wow. You know, that's actually very political.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that.
I could say my favorite owner is Jim Davis, who owns New Balance, still as a private company. I used to try to run in everything. You know, Rick and Art and I and about Dick Johnson and half a dozen or so others, we would run at noon every day and we would try out different things. But to ever say, you know, I don't like Asics, even though it's probably the best running shoe because they mistreated us. I love Nike and Reebok because they put us on the map. But yeah, the one thing that I would say is I don't like to watch people run barefoot.
Okay. Any shoe then is your favorite.
any shoe, as long as you're buying shoes. That's what I,
there you go.
I can't, you know, the first one that I ran in, the first marathon was in 1979, and I ran in the Adidas shoe that still had the hard rubber trefoils, and I still kept that pair of shoes just because it's a reminder of how backward the industry was until the competition between Nike, Reebok, a few of the others became so intense.
Yeah, there's a new show on Hulu called Sneaker Wars against Adidas and Puma. Adidas.
Yeah.
Well, Adi Dassler obviously broke with his brother, and I think around 1954, in Germany, and he started to call Rudy Dassler was Adi's brother, and he started a company called Ruda, and it wasn't a very cool name, so he changed it to Puma.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, and that's all featured on the Sneaker Wars on Hulu now.
Yeah, I actually went to that town and was lucky. I mean, when they made the resurrection of Adidas in the United States, the former head of marketing for Nike turned Adidas around and actually moved Adidas America from South Carolina to Portland, and there he was an enormous man, and he had, when Rick and Art and I went to visit him, they had cold kegs of beer in the lunchroom.
Now we're talking.
Ladies and gentlemen, Harry Colcord.
Thanks, Harry.
Thanks, Harry. Yeah. We know we missed a lot of questions there, but we had to ask that one. Your favorite shoe of all time.
Enjoy. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
Yeah, you too.
Well, we for sure missed a bunch of questions. It's impossible to get the questions perfect.
Yeah, we'd have to have them on for hours or days.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
But what an amazing story.
That was fun.
So until episode number 64.
Yeah, let's do it.
From high atop a rib mountain, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Paul.
And this has been a Wausau Business Show transmission. The end. Peace out, sneakerheads.
Stuck on you. Been a fool too long. I guess it's time for me to come on home. Guess I'm on my way. So hard to see that a woman like you could wait around for a man like me. Guess I'm on my way. Mighty glad you stayed.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
It's time for Sully's College Football Page on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Sully's College Football Page is brought to you by The Hilltop Bar, Advantage Insurance, Tommy's Express Car Wash, Duane's Cover It All, Buck's Golf Shop, Jim Creshock Jewelry, Big Fat Design, Sun Printing, Lot Knows, the Eye Clinic of Wisconsin, Peterson Kramer Funeral Home, Menzner Hardwoods, Grisowski Dental, the Cloverbelt Credit Union, April Rosemurgy EXP Realty, France Propane, Subway, Webco of Wausau, the Kuhn Hearing Center, Carmelo's and Rip Mountain Golf Course, Joe Raider Towing, the Dirks Group, the Intermission